and I are going to fuck this up a good bit because we have two wildly different albums running through our head at the same time.
You are damn right about that shit. Welcome to the Two Decades Too Late podcast, everybody. I am Brad, hanging out with Josh.
How's it going today, folks?
This is the podcast where Josh and I listen to albums, mostly metal for whatever it's worth, that are turning 20. We review them and give them a rating 1 through 5 on 4 different parameters, so a maximum of 20 from each of us and a total of 40 overall. What are you thinking, Josh? What do we got going on? It's the Oncoming Storm by Unearth.
That sounds so ominous. And you know what? I hadn't thought about it until just now, in a way that the album itself is not going to deliver on at all.
No. I mean, the lyrics do. Well, a lot of the lyrics are about, like, you know, we're killing our world sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, and that was 20 years ago. I'd say we have not improved.
We haven't. If anything, I think it's worse.
So
you
the
know,
oncoming
sure 2016
storm.
Had nothing to do with that. What?
I'm sorry. God, 20. Poor David Bowie, man.
Yep.
Anyway.
I'm going to have an eye twitch the rest of the day because of that. Yeah.
So this is The Oncoming Storm by Unearth. Unearth is a band out of Boston, Massachusetts. They formed in 1998, which actually surprised the crap out of me. So they were active.
No,
they were active for 6 years at this point, which in stark contrast to the last couple albums we reviewed being a band for like 15 minutes before getting signed.
Right.
These guys may have had to struggle a little bit, or the Boston, Massachusetts market is a little bit more saturated, but they had one album before this, The Stings of Conscience, came out in 2001 on Eulogy. So The Oncoming Storm's their first release on Metal Blade.
Which, by the way, did we mean to do three Metal Blade like records in a row if you don't count the, you know, multi episode? Oh, and by the way, because I'm a professional, happy 2024, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be our first episode.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that as if it's 2024. It's not.
Not currently.
No. But I'm trying to do better with that, because I'm always like, yeah, and this happened today, and I'm like, people are hearing this like a month and a half after I'm talking about it, so happy 2024.
Great point though. So we're switching into the year is 2004. Our shirts have gotten progressively tighter and our hair even more swept to the side in front.
You're damn right. Or buzz cut. There was no middle ground of any sort of like sensible things to do. It was like, I either have no hair or I got hair to the side and it's fucking black, baby.
That's right. And we'll talk about where I fit into that equation later, because it's actually a point that needs brought up. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. So this album
I'm curious.
Okay. Yeah. Came out June 29th, 2004. So this is our first album from 2004. Welcome to 2024. Album was produced by Adam D. of Killswitch Engage fame. So if you've listened to past albums or past episodes of this podcast, you know we're probably going to rank the production pretty high.
Yeah, the dude just doesn't know how to do it wrong. He doesn't. He just like, I don't know how. I mean, good for him being in a band and giving us such wonderful music, because he's also, I mean, I wish he was still like super fat, because at least it'd be like, you don't have all the things, but he's like a beautiful man on top of like being one of the best metal producers of all time, or at least in this niche, like he knew what to do with it. He's an incredible singer. Great screamer as well, and he shreds a guitar, and he originally played drums for Killswitch Engage.
Yeah.
That bitch.
I take solace in the fact that he's somewhat balding now.
Yeah, that's... But he's like 45 probably, right? Like, that's not even a weird time to do that.
No, you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. You're right, though. At least I'm not balding. So I'll I have that on him and literally nothing else. Right. Yeah, yeah. It'll happen.
So for this album, we got... Who's on this album? We got Trevor Phipps, lead vocals, Buzz McGrath, lead guitar. Brad, you may not have heard of this guy, Ken Susie, on rhythm guitar.
Yeah,
actually, backing vocals for a couple of the songs, which, you know, will lead to some discussion, I'm sure.
Oh, it will. It is in my notes.
So, rounding out the band members, we've got John Maggard and Mike Justian, who are new to the band for this album.
Yeah, and Mike Justian, my God. My God.
Great drummer.
We'll get into it, but he started in the Red Chord. He was on their first album. And it's like adding that level of technical talent to a band that is more melodic is chef's kiss. It's so good.
He's actually back in the band too. He recorded the newest album.
He didn't.
No?
He's not on the newest album. And the only reason I know that is because when I saw he was back in the band, my first thing was to look at their newest album to see if he recorded it, and he's not listed. So he like joined the band right after it was recorded. Damn. And it makes me so sad because I was going to go listen to that shit. But it just came out this year, so we'll probably have came out last year in 2023. It's a good album. I actually did listen to it anyway, but the whole reason I even wanted to is because I was hoping he was on it and it bummed me out. So we'll have to probably wait until 2025. They're pretty on the nose every 2 years, more or less, kind of
band. They are pretty, yeah.
I guess until they're not. Never mind. Maybe they're more like a three. Man, there was a 4 year stretch there. Anyway. Anyway, the long story short, Mike Justian's amazing.
He is. Amazing. And so I think Brad and I both have something to say about this, but whoever wrote the article for the review for Metal Storm, the guy was in the Red Chord, and then he plays drums on this album, and he has... The reviewer has the balls to say bad drumming.
Man, listen, I don't know who Herzabeth is with Metal Storm. I hope they're dead. Like, I maybe not literally. Maybe not literally.
Yeah.
But God, fuck them so hard. Like, I have never read a review. A, the reviews are like your territory, and I almost purposely now at this point don't read them, because when you give me stuff, I react to it and it's entertaining. But I happened to go to that one just because how bad a star it was. It was like 1 out of 10 or something. Dude, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the entirety of the metal community. That's how badly, like, whoever this person is has no idea what the fuck they're talking about. I understand music is subjective, but the shit that this person is saying, like, and I even wrote almost verbatim what you just said. If you're going to call the drumming by possibly one of the best drummers in the history of this genre bad, and then you call the riffs hideous.
Yeah.
This person used the word hideous, you piece of shit. Like... You're either like the most contrarian, or you don't like this kind of music. And then why are you reviewing it? I don't like, so either your company's fucking moronic because they're saying, hey, yeah, you hate metalcore or whatever's going on at the time. Why don't you review this metalcore album? Or, oh God, just give that person a fucking ice pick lobotomy like right now. And then... You call the Black Dahlia Murder metalcore in the review.
Oh,
she,
God.
This person, I keep saying she. I have no idea if it's a he, she, or they. Whatever it is. Herzabeth made me think,
It's 2024. Anyway, don't assume.
Right. No. No, I have no idea who this person is. But like, you're going to say, oh God, it's giving me a headache. I could talk about this for like an hour, but like, then you're going to call the Black Dahlia Murder metalcore and literally point out like, this is the worst metalcore album since Black Dahlia Murder. It's like, dude, this is
patently false.
So you like, and it just proves you have no idea what you're talking about. You can hate the album. Listen, like, I know people listen to this that I know that do not like this type of music, and they're probably just doing it to be supportive.
Right.
And that's wonderful. Thank you so much for that, by the way. But like, I wouldn't then ask that person to review this album, because if you've never heard anything like this, your review would be like, I don't know what they're saying. Why are they yelling at me? This is super loud. I don't know what's going on. And I would say that is super fair, and I understand you completely. But this piece of shit. Okay, I'm done. Fuck them. Fuck them.
They still gave it a 3.5. So they're like, yeah, I mean, this, you know, people will probably like it. But, you know.
Did they really? I don't know if that makes me hate it more or less. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. This motherfucker. Oh, man.
This album sucks. 3.5 stars out of 5. Oh, no. Like, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. I fucked that up. This was out of 10.
Ah, I was going to say, I thought it was pretty bad.
It was pretty bad. But, okay, that makes way more sense.
So, yeah.
But for people who know what they're talking about, it also didn't get really great reviews based on how much Brad and I are going to talk about how much we love this album. AllMusic gave it a 3 out of 5. The user score was a 3 out of 5. The user score for the Metal Storm was 7.5 out of 10. So, like, you know, basically 3.5 out of 5. So,
yeah,
weirdly, not particularly critically well received. I mean, very meaty, middle of the road.
No, and we'll get into it. When you first, because before we started, at least before I started doing the listening for this episode, you told me about that. Because you were comparing the reviews for this one in next week's episode. See what I did there? Pretty good. Super just professionalism.
We're going to record it today, though.
Yeah, like right after we're done with this.
Right after.
And I remember thinking, like, that's crazy to me. But I will say that I kind of get it after deep diving into both.
I get it, yeah.
Yeah. I was really, like, honestly taken aback when it was just like, that had better reviews than this, and then I
scoff.
Yeah, I scoffed, and you know, I don't even know where I was going. But like, and I do get it a little bit. I will say that I think nostalgia plays a bit of a part in my fondness for this album, but not a lot. Yeah. Not a lot. I mean, it probably gives me like an extra 10%. But not much more, but it's there. It's a thing. Yeah,
it is a thing. But man, this album, like, it's one of those ones that just hit right at the right time. Like, if you removed it from then and like where we were in the situation that we were in, I mean, yeah, probably it's a mediocre album that gets lost in the shuffle. But it wasn't, and it didn't.
No, it did not. It couldn't have been. Well, yeah, we're, you know,
we were talking a little bit before actually recording this, and I was telling Brad, like, this is so transitioning from 2003 albums to 2004 albums. Like, this was the first one that we dove into that I really started to, like, I can place where we were, what was going on. Like, I remember all the music videos. I remember what I was doing at the time. So, like, the 2003 albums, you know, definitely loved them. They were kind of an introduction, but like, this one's deeply ingrained.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, I bought it from FYE at the Upper Valley Mall in Springfield. Like, and it was probably like $40, which is hilarious to think about. I mean, not literally, but honestly, probably not far off. But like, I this was one of those albums, and Atreyu the Curse, I want to say came out relatively around the same date, if not on the same date. Am I making that up? But
could have been.
I mean, I raced to get those albums, and this one, I mean, Black Hearts Now Rain, that fucking came out, and I didn't even know. I was just like, holy shit, this is crazy. Like, this
it
is
was.
Mostly because they weren't doing the, well, and we'll get into that a little bit in the reviews too, but like, they weren't following the same, they were more metal and hardcore than most metalcore bands. Like, they were really, really metal and really, really hardcore, and they weren't trying to do the whole, like, what metalcore as a portmanteau.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you, when you combine two words? Is that, am I right?
Well done.
Thanks. The portmanteau version of metalcore, I would say, is more Killswitch Engage and As I Lay Dying, that sort of thing. But, like, they were metal and hardcore. And it just, it was all I wanted it to be.
Because of Mike Justian's drumming coming from the Red Chord?
You know, so I was thinking about that, and I went back. So one of my favorite songs by them, which, by Unearth, that is The Charm, which came out on their previous release. It might have even been the EP, but it's one of my favorite songs by them ever. And I didn't know until I started my research on this, that during they had a special edition Oncoming Storm that had them recording The Charm for that album. So better production and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't think it was him, just because they were doing it without him. You know what I mean? And even the re-record on the special edition of Oncoming Storm, Mike Justian really closely followed what the other drummer, I don't know if it was the original drummer, but the other drummer did. So, because I had that same thought, I will say that him being on the album made them stand out in a completely different way. Because we talked about Blood Has Been Shed, and Justin Foley was a monster. But, you know, I had someone text me that listened to this, and they argued that Blood Has Been Shed wasn't metalcore anyway, because they're so technical, they almost leaned into grindcore.
Yeah, I'd buy that. Yeah, I wouldn't argue that.
No, I wouldn't either. I don't know if they weigh into it so much that they skip the genre, but like,
yeah,
I'm not also, to your point, I'm not in defiance of it either. But so his drumming was nuts because they were a nuts band.
Right.
But Mike Justian's drumming is nuts, and they are not a nuts band, and it made the everything, if there was a part that maybe I didn't love a lot, he generally elevated it.
That's a good point.
Like, yeah. So, well, I don't know if we want to get into some high-level reactions to things, but like, I don't know what it is about that era of metalcore. And again, they're more metal, they're more hardcore than most. But what was it about having to have the slowdown part in a song that had such great, like, momentum? And it, like, I understand that art should have peaks and valleys, and I get that, but like, the feeling that you have to shoehorn this like soft part in a song that is a steamroller otherwise, I've never understood it. We hit that hard with Darkest Hour, because
album.
Yeah, but like, they do that at times here.
They do. Yeah, it wasn't an uncommon thing to do either. So I mean, these guys, I mean, wait, Boston, Massachusetts, Darkest Hour was happening in like the DC area. Shadows Fall and Overcast kind of came up with Unearth too, so like, everything was kind of going on at the same time, especially in that area, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, New England, they reset their our version, our generation's version of like the British Invasion almost. Yeah. Or like, the 80s was the Tampa Bay area of thrash metal, that whole thing in the 80s with like Exodus and everyone. This is our version of that. It was the New England metalcore thing was just, well, and that's why the festival was there.
Yeah, right. So,
not weird.
So it's funny, I actually have a note here, like, you could call this album a more melodic version of Hidden Hands of a Sadist Nation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and better.
Yeah.
Just more cohesive of a piece of music. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like, they have that. I mean, if you ever wanted proof that this whole group of bands, Killswitch, you know, and all of them included, were influenced by Scandinavian, like, melodic death metal, the intro to Zombie Autopilot, look no further. I mean, that's
the whole album. Never, being 20 years removed from it now, like, I didn't know it at the time because I didn't really know what Scandinavian metal was at the time, but yeah. Predetermined Skies, you get like Serious, The Absence, or In Flames vibes with the
yep. Which, by the way, great song, by the way. All the songs are great. As the weakest track on the, I mean, awesome.
I was going
to
do that too.
Awesome thing to have happen organically. Yeah. Predetermined Sky is like, go ahead.
I noted this song is better than I was going to give it credit for based on how it begins.
Yeah. No, it's a good song, but like, I don't know. It just, the middle section that there's, by the way, I don't think their songwriting isn't like outrageously weird or anything, like their structures of their songs. Yeah. But I generally don't know what the chorus is on most of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is definitely that, but the middle section that is maybe a bridge, goes on for a long time and the drums are sick, but it's like, that's the one part that I don't love on the album that the drumming doesn't save it. Like, right. I have other parts on the album that, like, I'm like, I don't really know why they did that there. And I'm not even going to talk about Aries. Who cares?
Like, yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's not good or bad. It's just like,
it's just there. Shoehorned
it's just there.
In.
And also, yeah. And again, it was another thing that everyone was kind of doing. Killswitch did the same stuff, and
the near end of the album, you're gonna put in this little almost instrumental thing,
right? So I mean, it's fine, but like, is 10 songs seems more tidy to me on an album than 11, and yet you landed on 11 because you had to put Aries on there. I don't
right.
It's fine. That's a good point. It doesn't bother me. Maybe it does. I guess it must. Yeah.
Sure sounds like it does.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go as far as to call the album generic by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not overly complicated, and it's definitely of the zeitgeist of what was happening around them.
Couldn't agree more.
Energy to it. Like, so I remember seeing the videos before listening to the songs. And man, you watch some of those New England hardcore, metal and hardcore videos, some of their live performances. It was amazing. Like, you were pumped and you're like, I want some more of this. The guitar player with his choker on.
Yeah. No, it was just a whole thing. They were doing it just in a different way. Than, I mean, yeah, you could almost compare the certain things to other bands, but they're like, the sum of the parts was definitely something different than everybody else. Like,
agreed.
And they crushed it. That's why this album was such a fucking, it's a killer, man. Like, I needed some, like, The Great Dividers, holy shit. The way to start an album, that's how you start a fucking
metalcore album,
dude. Like, my God. It that song starts, punches you right in your fucking neck. It does not stop. The drums are insane. I mean, honestly, if they did any more technicality with the music writing, you could almost put them into a technical metal, like, subgenre because of his drumming. His drumming is outrageous. I mean, it's crazy.
It's just funny because the next song, Failure, I noted, like, I never liked the way this started. It's kind of generic and not good enough to be featured, but what follows the beginning of that song is amazing.
Yeah, so, like, well, I don't know. Failure's, like, the intro's cool just because a lot of dudes back then either couldn't shred a guitar or were choosing not to. They were, like, choosing melody over whatever. But Failure, with that whole, like, arpeggio thing going on, it was like, flex your guitar muscle a little bit, guys. That's pretty, because, dude, Buzz is, he shreds. And honestly, Ken Susie is, he played solos and shit, too. They were both, you know, Ken Susie had the whole, like, oh man, One Step Away thing where he's doing the arpeggios behind his head.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, but like,
yeah,
and he's not even the lead guitar player. So it's like, they had some real talent, but you're right. The intro's a little whatever, but then right after is a metalcore verse that could easily be generic, but Mike Justian's drums just make it something completely other. I mean, dude, it can't be overstated the importance of that guy on this thing. It could have easily been even more. I don't find anything about it generic, especially at the time, which is the thing I keep having to remind myself of.
Yes.
But even at the time, if it was going to be, it wasn't because of him. They really couldn't have picked a better dude to hold this album down.
Yeah. He was on the next album too, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He was on the next one too, and then I think that's when he left. And now he's back, and I can't wait for them to record a new album with him. Also, yay. I don't know if you noticed this, but like their breakdowns were not like most people, like most bands' breakdowns. They were kind of, I don't know how
they
to describe
different.
It. They were, yeah, they were a lot, they were different. I didn't, none of them felt, again, it was just like almost more hardcore than any other metalcore band doing breakdowns. Like
they, yep, they were super headbangy, still a little, they didn't go into full like wading through a pool of jello breakdown.
Yeah, no, it's really sick. And I, again, at the time, I don't think I understood that, but yeah. And Yoda, man, it's very rare that, so we have a new thing that we've added to the podcast.
Oh yes.
Via Josh with
Merry
a very
Christmas
good
and
idea.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah. Very good by him. But we happen to have this idea, or he had this idea before. Probably the heart. Well, we're going to do some albums. 2004 was nuts, but
great year.
This is probably top five hardest albums to do this on, and we started with it. But we're going to do our favorite song off the album. I don't know. What do you think? Before the review, after the review?
Probably after the review.
Okay. So, and I'm looking at my notes. In track one, favorite question mark. Track three, another possible favorite. Yeesh. Track four, should be a favorite. Let's talk about it. Track five, slow part prevents it from being a favorite.
Oh,
so
no.
That's interesting because it's Zombie Autopilot. Let's see. Where else? Track 11, False Idols. Possible favorite. I hate this. Fuck Josh. So,
awesome.
Yeah. So it's just. Yeah, this album is, it just fucking rules still. But let's, so when we talked about the favorite thing, we went out to eat like a week ago or like a month and a half ago.
All right.
You know,
time.
But no one knows when we went out to eat. So it doesn't, that's, but you said like, is it Black Hearts Now Rain or Zombie Autopilot? And I was like, weirdly, no, just because. This thing's a fucking, this is like the album equivalent. I don't even have the term. It's just it. Every song. Again, I have one song and I'm not counting Aries. It's not a song. I don't even know why it's there. It's fine.
Suck
but like,
it.
There's just like, and yeah, I mean, it's just Predetermined Skies. Like really the only song that even felt kind of weak to me. Like it's
yeah.
just, and it's not, but it just is. It seemed like Predetermined Sky was a bit of a, we've got parts, we need, you know, four more minutes.
Like when you're putting together the IKEA furniture and there's always extra parts, so you just throw them onto the thing anyway because you're like, I must have missed those. Here.
Exactly.
If they're here, they're meant to be with this piece of furniture.
Right. No, absolutely.
It's almost never the case
either. No. No. But yeah, it's just a fucking rips, man. Like, and by the way, Predetermined Sky being my least favorite song on the album is just immediately followed by False Idols, which is just,
it's another banger.
I mean, God, and his drums, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's the nuttiest drum performance on the album, which is saying a lot.
Yeah. And I know that you don't actually play music in music videos, but man, the Zombie Autopilot music video where he's wearing that coat and scarf the whole time, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. He's just looking super stylish. Like, man, by the way, does anything put that shit in 2004 more than his outfit?
His outfit, everything, dude. Like the beanie with the hat bill. I had one of those to hide my hideous hair because I couldn't do the sweep over. So for anybody who knew me in 2004, you'll know that I looked like, you know, the movie Holes. I looked like Shia LaBeouf's character and the kid who played Hector Zeroni had a baby. That's what my hair was in 2004.
I took a drink of water when you just said that, man. I thought I was going to die. That's fucking hilarious. Do you remember the time when, what's her name? Like, straightened your hair before show?
Oh, yeah. I looked great.
But you know what? With straightened hair, you could have done the side thing like nobody's business.
Could have.
And then
could have for sure.
Then here's a funny story, which I tell to anyone that I can. I was actually just telling a really good friend about this. Josh is very tan. If you see the photo and you see his hair is up like that, he probably has to do nothing for his hair to be up like that because it's so impossibly curly. And we used to hang out with my cousin, little Dave, a lot. And we were going to go over there and watch something. I don't remember what it was, but it was about Christmas. Like, little Dave had all his Christmas stuff up. And I got there before Josh did. And he goes, "Hey, should I take the Christmas stuff down?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "I don't want to offend Josh. Like, is this an offensive situation, right?" And I was like, "I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. Why would it be offensive?" And he goes, "Because he's Jewish." And I'm like, "What?" And little Dave had known. I mean, little Dave was a
years,
really important part of my
almost
I
a mean, decade I, at that point.
Yes, it all maybe, yeah, like it maybe at least a decade at that point. And, like, he was, like, emphatic that you were Jewish. He's like, because he said it to me like I was a moron.
Right.
Like, what do you mean, why would it be offensive, you idiot? Your Jewish friend's coming over here, which, by the way, I don't know. Email or comment on the podcast is if you're Jewish and you go to someone's house that has a Christmas tree up, is that offensive? I have no idea. I have no point of reference for that.
Yeah.
But you're not Jewish.
No. Very
at
much
all,
not.
But man, he was convinced of it, and that was one of the funniest moments of my life because I laughed until I cried
to consider my feelings.
Dude, this guy rules so hard. Anyone who no one knows who he is, but right. If you do, my cousin Little Dave is a wonderful human being who is literally willing to take his Christmas tree down. Because Josh was coming over to watch something on TV. Like, it wasn't
he had a family at that time, by the way. So my family's feelings aside.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to host my friend. Not even me. Like, I'm his cousin. My friend coming over. He was like, "Do I need to take all my Christmas shit down?" I'm like, "Dude, first of all, no." But, like, second of all, the fact that you even thought of it. Anyway. Josh had really curly hair.
Really curly hair.
Or does. I said had. That's not
true. It's still there, yeah.
Yep. Do you have any other... It's so good. I was going to say, do you have any other high-level points you want to hit? Here's one thing I would want to say. We are going to get to one of our parameters for the ratings is impact at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff impacted us. We talked about it with Every Time I Die. But this album was different because we straight up, like, ripped off parts of this album exactly as they were. Like, False Idols. What's the song that starts off with the... Lie to Purify, where he starts off and he's yelling 1, 2, 3 while he's counting on the hi-hat.
Oh, yeah.
We we literally did that. Like, it didn't just like, oh, that's a cool idea. We went, okay, we're doing that. We're starting a song like that.
For sure. Plenty more on this album, like the little dissonant bit in Endless, the dun 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 banana.
Yeah. Yeah, no joke. And like the end of Bloodlust of the Human Condition, we ripped it off exactly. That whole thing, like we did it at the end of a song. We didn't just rip it off as a part. We put it we changed the entire tempo of that song, which we were just so bad at writing music at the time. But like we changed the entire tempo of a song to do that exact thing at that exact tempo. Like if we got big, we would have either been sued or someone would have been making fun of us like we make fun of A Day to Remember.
For sure, yep. And we make fun of them hard. There's a whole YouTube video where you can see everybody they've ripped off. It's blatant. It's terrible. It's hilarious. Check it out.
It is hilarious.
Yeah, what is it? The highest form of flattery? Imitation?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
So, the do album you have overall? Any
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I was just about to ask.
I was just going to throw out, like, you know, for the mediocre reviews that it seems to have gotten, like, some people loved it because it charted. U.S. Heatseekers, Billboard, it hit number one. It hit number six on the independent albums chart. It hit 105 on the Billboard 200, which I think all that is amazing.
Man, the Billboard 200 is a big deal. 105 for an album like this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's fucking impressive. Good for
them.
So
maybe
man.
That's what it was. Like, maybe the metal community was like, eh. And then maybe the more mainstream music folks were like, I can access this.
Yeah, which access. I don't understand. I just don't understand. The reviews of this album are indicative of the hatred for metalcore as a genre.
Yeah.
At the time. It just it is what it is. And it's... today's not the day for me to rant about that for the 15th billionth time or whatever it is. But, like, it's just... They didn't want to like this. Just
right.
People in metal for and hardcore, for whatever reason. It's just the whole get your peanut butter out of my chocolate thing was just so harsh. And I don't get it. It's like no one was that mad about, like, I don't know, disco being like a combination of like funk and pop. You know what I mean? No one else. I feel like that was the one group that hated something for no reason more than most. Cause it was just like, what's wrong with it? Are you not listening to metal and hardcore in 2003, 2004? I was. So
have you tried mixing peanut butter and chocolate? It's amazing.
Yeah. Like, eat a Reese's cup, man. It's good.
I'm Officer Reese's. What happened here?
Man, you got one in. You got one in. That's great. I'm glad we got there. But probably time for the review.
The review!
Yeah! All right. Well, Josh, what do you think of the album art on this here thing?
Man, as much as I love the album and as much as I tried to avoid saying that the music was generic, the album artwork is generic. It's pretty like clip arty. The tornado in the background, I mean, it's got some stylistic, nice graphic appeal. Their logo has always been nice, but the album art as a whole doesn't really thrill me. So I landed on solidly mediocre. 3 out of 5.
Well, and you know what? Honestly, I'm glad you said clip art because I couldn't think. That's what I was trying to think of when I was like, what is this? It looks cheap, but I couldn't think of the term. Like, yeah, so it's really clip arty. Like, the buildings just look fake as hell in
front
of that.
Photoshop hadn't been around that long at this point.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's what it seems to me. It seems like it's like me trying to use Photoshop last week and saying, hey, man, can you please use Photoshop because I got nothing. But like, yeah, you're right. The tornado looks kind of cool, but then it makes the buildings look even worse.
Right.
They stand out so bad.
Like, is that the magic castle? Like, is that the Disney castle on the front?
Man. And like the tree, like, listen, I appreciate very much at the time, having, and you know, I have this thing where I've made fun of, if you are in Columbus or the greater Columbus area in Ohio, you care about sports even a little bit, not much because they don't talk about it much, but Common Man and T-Bone, one of my favorites. And they have this habit of saying, we're not stat guys, but let me give you a stat. And I just remember thinking after years and years of that, of going, at what point are you just not
stat
against
guys?
Stats? Because you bring, right. Yeah. And so I don't know how many times I'm going to say I'm not a lyric guy before I have to go, maybe I'm more of a lyric person than I thought I was, because I keep reading these lyrics. I like the lyrics a lot. Some of them are a little America more than I probably love, but that's fine. That's fine.
That wasn't a thing in 2004 though.
No, it was. And you're from New England. I assume that comes with a little extra of that. Culturally. But like, I love that his lyrics have a lot to do with like, let's stop burning the planet down, way before a lot of people were, at least before I was, you know, talking about it or caring about it.
For sure.
But like the tree in the front,
it's a little hard. Yep.
Anyway, very long story short, I can't even hit it. 3. You're right, the logo's sick and it continues to be sick. I'm glad we can read it easily. But I'm gonna go with a 2. It's so cheap. It just looks
boom.
Like someone's nephew was asked to put an album art together. I don't know. Whoever
Maybe
did it, I'm sorry. It's 2004. I'm sure you were doing the best with what you had, but
yeah. Right. I don't even think I found who did the artwork. There's some credits for layout and photos, but
yeah, I don't. Whoever Grail is,
Grail. Oh, what? Grail.
This. It's really good. It's really good. If I say Grail, what's the first thing anyone thinks about? Are you thinking of, Holy
Monty
Grail,
Python?
Right?
Yeah.
Monty Python, or do you think of Indiana Jones? Because
you
can go
Python.
Both ways. Yeah, same. I mean, same. Have you tried watching that recently?
No.
I don't know if it's a product of us watching it every like 6 days for a year. In whatever year that was, but boy, I can't get through that shit anymore. Like,
It was hard to get through like originally because it got so weird. Like the funny bits were funny, but then. I do love that they brought back the French taunter recently.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's awesome.
Genius.
Yeah.
He did taunt us a second time.
Yep. Also, the 100 times that we are going to say time, that's what it's from, if anyone was curious. I don't know. Yeah. Go watch Holy Grail. I don't know. Production, then verse now, Josh.
I mean, it's Adam D. What can you say?
Yep. Yep.
You got it. I gave it a 4 because he's really good. There's nothing extra to it, I don't think. So,
yep.
But it holds up incredibly well.
So, I'm going to give it. This was tough. The only thing that stopped me from giving it a 5 was Dimmu Borgir. I really almost regret putting that album in when we did because it changed. It shifted the pendulum pretty hard in my mind.
That was last year. That's some old shit.
That's even more to the point. So it, you know, whatever, but it's a 5. in every way except that Dimmu Borgir's production was better.
It's a 5-.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. So I'm giving it a 4 as well. Awesome. And it holds up, by the way. Like, then versus now, then, get the fuck out of here. Now, it's still, again, you can be nitpicky. Production has gotten to the point where you can make things perfect. And I know some people don't love that. I do. I like modern production a lot. But it's just right now, there's nothing about it that stands out. It's like, can you believe that they recorded this like that? Like, no, there's none of that.
Yeah. And definitely in 2004, also, this was one of the most like crushing full frontal albums that you could hear at the time.
Yeah, totally agreed. Also, his vocals, listen to every Unearthed album. His vocals will sound different on every single one. That's his style. Like, I'm sure he's not doing that on purpose. It's just like the type of vocal he's doing. It's just, that's just the nature of it. But his vocal performance on this and the sound of his vocals on this are the best, in my opinion, out of any of them.
That's fair. So, what kind of an impact did it have on you at the time?
Impact at the time? My Lord. I mean, again, it's hard to overstate because, like, I mean, again, we didn't just rip off parts of it. We straight up consciously talked about it in your garage with our band. Hey, did you hear the end of that Unearthed song? Let's do that as an ending. Like, we ripped it off so blatantly. It was not even... yeah, it's insane. Insane. And it's a 5. I mean, it's a 5. I don't even know why I'm like talking about it like it's, I don't know, anything else. It's a 5 all day.
Same. I mean, you can't belabor the point too much. Like, you can keep kicking this dead horse and you're never going to get tired of it. This album was the entire scene. I already mentioned, like, the haircuts. Look at the video from 2004. Like, everything going on. You will see what Brad and I's life and ethos was at that time.
Yeah, it's, like, literally my identity. Like, if you...
the whole deal.
Every Time I Die plus Unearthed divided by Killswitch Engage equals who I was at the time. Yep. So, yeah. How much did you enjoy listening to it today?
It was great. Like, I gave it a solid 4. I didn't give it a 5 because, like you said, you know, I've heard this album for 20 years. I've never really stopped listening to these songs. And after 20 years, they can get a little old. But I definitely started to get some of the comments about it being somewhat generic or maybe formulaic to a point. Not necessarily generic, but if you were a fan then, you'll certainly be a fan of this album now. And based on the reviews, even if you weren't a fan, like, this is a pretty accessible album to get into in a way that the next episode is almost certainly not going to be.
No, God, the two album, the 1-2 punch here, guys, is, man, one of these things is not like the other. But no, I totally agree. I gave it a 4 as well. I do think a little bit of that is fatigue, to your point. I just have never, this has been in my rotation. I bought it the day it came out and I haven't stopped listening to it since. So strong 4 for me. Again, there's like, by the time you get to the, you know, 9th or 10th track, it's just like,
right.
It's a little much. And again, though, it ends with False Idols, which brings me right back. I think that's the... honestly, what a great ending track, because Predetermined Sky, I'm bored a little bit.
Right.
And I'm like, man, this just now seems a little long. And then when False Idols comes on, I'm just refreshed. That fucking... like bridge part with the Tom build-up thing and the chant. Oh, God. If you're not ready to spin kick someone right in their face to that, I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you.
And then you loop it right back into the Great Dividers.
Yeah. Oh, and it, like, I don't know if that was, like, a conscious decision to have it go into that so well, but my God, it, yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful. All right, so let's see. Well, so just to recap, we've got a total of 5 for album art. That's funny. And then production, then verse now, we've got a total of 8 between us. Impact of the Time, 10. I could not be less surprised by the 10 of Impact of the Time.
Yeah.
Enjoyed listening it today, total of 8. So we've got a 31. It's pretty solid. The album art obviously being the Achilles heel here, but
yeah,
we got the new section again. Goodbye, Josh, thinking of this. I hate that this is the album that we started it on,
right?
But Josh, what is your favorite song on the oncoming storm by Unearth?
So yeah, if I'm gonna tell somebody like this is a great album, my favorite song is blah, you should check it out based on this song alone, I'm going to go with Zombie Autopilot. I've just always loved that riff. I love that. I love the dual solo. The dual solo gets me every time. And then I'm a sucker for the soft part at the end. Like, you know, just fade that shit out, go into something, and then build into Bloodlust. So for me, it's Zombie Autopilot.
So this is, I'm a pain in the ass a lot with a lot of things. If you know me, that's very obvious. Like when someone asks me what my favorite movie is, I'm like, well, what do you mean? The best movie that I think is ever made or my favorite one to watch? And I'm that guy really bad. And I'm aware of it. And I'm a pain in the ass. I'm a pain in the ass with so much shit. It's just, you know, probably fatiguing for everybody and I'm going to keep doing it. But
woo.
Zombie Autopilot has the best part on the whole album, which I think is the chorus. Again, I don't know. It doesn't sound like a chorus, but the way the structure is leads me to believe that the idea of that is the chorus. So that's the best part on the album, but my favorite is The Great Dividers. It's just, and I had a really hard time narrowing this down because, like, this lying world, that verse is just a fucking, like, that double bass on a verse like that, it's amazing. Again, I use the phrase or word steamroller a lot. It's definitely that. But Great Dividers for me, I think your logic is made me rethink it, because I guess you're right. If I were to say to someone, like, start here, and if you like that, go other, like, listen to the whole thing, it would be Zombie Autopilot. So I don't have an argument with that.
Yeah.
But my favorite is The Great Dividers. It just kicks you in the face and it doesn't stop. It has no slow part, which I'm not generally in favor of. I know people, you know, I get it. I do get it. It's just for me, even when I write music, like that was my big thing in Behold Eternity. I didn't want that. I'm like, no, we're going to start off a song at 100 miles an hour. I'm not going to stop being 100 miles an hour until the song's over and you're just going to have to deal with it. But yeah, that's it. Long story short, Great Dividers. Absolutely amazing. And God, can you imagine being in that practice room or in the recording studio and that's your intro to an album? Get the fuck out of here. It's amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah. All super good.
Yep.
So if you haven't heard of Unearth, go check them out. If you missed this CD or haven't listened to it in a while, dust it off, throw it back in your car stereo in 2004. It's gonna be hard to find a CD player just lying around these days, or just get it on iTunes or a digital source of media because it's 2024.
Yep, and you know, then you don't have to worry about putting the face of your CD player on in your car so it's not stolen, because at the time,
I forgot that.
Yep, so pull the face of your CD player out of your bedroom to put on so no one can steal it and pop in Oncoming Storm.
Sick.
But yeah.
Yeah. With that, I've been Josh, he's been Brad, and we've been 2 decades too late.